I am so glad that you're here. This workshop is really an adaptation of something that I do with our church planters on an ongoing basis, and kind of a compilation of things that I have learned from my own ministry experience and from the experience of working with church planters in all kinds of different contexts now. Some of what God has allowed me to be exposed to and in church planting has been a broad spectrum of contexts for church. So often in ministry, we get plugged into one place, and we're there a lot, and we maybe then get into another place. And we got two or three kind of exposures. One of the neat things that I get to do, which is really fun, is to travel all over the place and get immersed into different types of church plants, different types of existing churches, and see how they work and what's going on in all of that. And so out of all of that, I've got some things that hopefully will be helpful for you in all of this. But let's just pray as we begin. Father, thank you so much for the opportunity to connect together like this. Lord, we just pray that your hand would be upon this time as we gather and dig in. And Lord, I pray that you would use me to help and encourage my brothers and sisters here today, just to engage with their community and to get the community thinking and exposed to the gospel. And so Lord, we commit this to you in Jesus' name, amen. In Romans chapter 10, there's a simple passage that we all memorize and we all know really well, where Paul says, and this is the word of faith that we are proclaiming, that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. For it's with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it's with your mouth that you confess and are saved. As the scripture says, anyone who trusts in him will never be put to shame. For there's no difference between Jew and Gentile, and the same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then can they call on the one whom they've not believed in? And how can they believe in the one in whom they've not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. How can they hear without someone preaching to them? I think if, as the church, we were to look at it and say, at us as a body of people and say, well, what do we do? If we do anything, we do communication. Right? We communicate in all kinds of ways. We are always trying to better our sound systems and our ways of communicating and the clarity that we get, and we make fun of ourselves when we use churches that used to do bulletins. Most of our churches don't anymore, but we used to make blooper things and all the jokes and the funny things that, you know, the classic one was, you know, the people for the weight loss class, go, please use the wide double doors at the back of the church. And it was like, whoops, that's not what we meant. And, you know, all these silly things. And communication was really important, right? That's what we did. And so communication is something that we are about. And yet, when it comes to the gospel, we often fail to communicate it to the people who need it most. Or at least we communicate it really well, but the people who really need to hear that part aren't in the room when we communicate it. So how do we engage those people? How do we get them from outside to inside? How do we connect with them at a place where they can hear? Because how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And this is something that should be nagging at us, and we should be agonizing over. It should be the thing that as we drive through our neighborhoods or walk down the street and we see these houses and we think, how do I get beyond that manicured lawn or that closed front door? How do I get into that walk-up or that closed condo building that I can't get in because I don't live there. How do I engage these people? Because how can they believe in one who they've not heard? And this is the thing that's gotta nag at you. And I tell you, as a church planter, this is one of the things that drove me crazy. I was just always looking for, how do I engage these people? How do I get past the walls that we all put up? And I mean, in our culture, if you live in, like, my context is more kind of suburbia on a normal basis. And so people will drive home and they come in their laneway and as they're driving down the street, their garage door goes up. They drive into the driveway and it goes down behind them and you never see them until the next morning when it goes up and they back out and they drive away. And in that context, how do you get beyond that? And it's a struggle. There's been a major cultural shift that's taken place within our context in Canada and really in a global way in recent years towards people needing much more of a relational approach to building a local church family. It's different than it used to be. People used to normally go to church. There used to be a community understanding, a common system of thinking. Even if people didn't go to church, they had common morality across communities and things like that. If you go back to the 60s, in that time frame, yeah, things were changing, but normal neighborhoods, there was a normality to all of that. So many of our churches are still functioning in a way that they kind of think, well, that's normal. Well, the reality is when you go outside your door, that's not normal anymore. I mean, just the way we look after our kids today and the things that you and I were allowed to do as children and that we would never let our kids do today. I would get on my bicycle and I would ride and I would be, 5 or 6 kilometers away from home, hanging out with people that my parents didn't know, going into their house, and it wasn't a problem for my parents. I don't think it was safe, but they didn't think it was a problem because there was this understanding of common. Our culture has changed, right? And I think we can all agree that it's changed drastically. As a result, what we have seen is many variations of what we call today the missional church. We've all heard the word and the name missional. Most of us don't really understand it because there's about 47 different definitions of what it means to be missional. And for the purposes of our context, what I want to use as a working kind of a definition is that the missional church is a church that at its core is on mission. Okay? And you might think, oh, that's a given, but it's not a given. Okay, because sometimes we get into our minds that this is the mission. This is the goal. So we've got a church gathering together. We've got, the number can vary. It can be from anywhere from 100 to 5,000 people and anywhere in between. We have them together in one place. We have fantastic worship. We have a decent facility. It meets our needs. We're, all the bills are being paid. We've got money to do outreach things and other stuff. But really, it's all about this. And once we get the light and the smoke machine, man, we've arrived. And that's it. And that would be right if the church itself was the mission, but it's not so much the mission. You see, we are a people, the church, not the building. We are a people who have been commissioned. And so when we have leaders in the church, it says in Ephesians 4 that he gave some to be apostles, prophets, pastors, and teachers, evangelists, pastors, and teachers, to equip the church to do the work of the ministry. And so Jesus came and he showed us how to live out the life and how to reach the poor and to set the captives free and to do all of that. And then he gave us the Great Commission and said, now go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And so he gave us this command. And the natural response to that was the book of Acts, right? And all of the disciples and the apostles, and they went out and they made disciples, who made disciples, who made disciples, and churches were started all over the place. And it was understood that they would continue to do what the disciples had taught them to do, and then they would move on somewhere else and do it, and it would move on somewhere else, and they would do it, and it expanded, changed the world, turned the world upside down. Handful of people. Because they were on a mission. And so the church today is really shifting in its focus, because the natural tendency of people to just normally come in and check things out. Oh, there's a new church. We should go and see what's in that. Now it's like you saying, oh, there's a new mosque. I should go in and see what's in there. You're not going to go in there. That's what the normal person in our context and culture is thinking when they see a new church. They're not thinking I should go in. So our thinking has to shift. And the way that we connect with people shifts as well. So there's two things as we move along that we'll see. Missional engagement. This is. I've already gone on this. Sometimes we get things mixed up and think that the church is the mission, when in reality the church is to be on mission. All this stuff is important. We need the Bible teaching. We need the solid work that's done in this way. We need all of that to equip the saints to do the work and to be the people of God. To be the salt and the light, but never forget that we're on mission. This is the thing, we're on mission. And so one of the challenges, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, we'll get there, is that there's really two different kind of focuses that need to take place. You see, when culture shifts, and we see it with every generation, and we're seeing it like more than ever right now, and it's fun to watch in my family, because now I have grandkids, and two of them were here this morning, just a little bit ago this afternoon, and so my generation, I fit into the Generation X kind of a generation, and then my kids are millennials, and their kids now are these brand new babies, and they're like at one, my grandson knows the buttons to push on the iPhone and the iPad to get, he's one, and he knows what, it's mind-blowing. What on earth is that generation going to be like? It's going to be so different than our generation, you know, and the generation between, and the generation that's gone past, and all of that. We see the shifts happen. But what's interesting is that we are called to be salt and light in a community. If we were a youth ministry, we'd focus on one generation and we might have one approach. But as the church, we're reaching families, we're reaching generations, we're reaching people in a spectrum. And so there's a variety of things that must take place in order for us to make the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. And so we've got this going on. So missional engagement, first off, is critically important, because culture doesn't shift wholesale, but it does shift. So, you know, to say that, you know, everybody thinks in a certain way. So when our culture became postmodern, to say that, oh, well, nobody thinks in a modern way is a fallacy. There is a trend that was moving postmodern, but there was still a lot of people who had that modern thinking, right? And so the culture becomes a mix of things, and now there's, you know, a new generation coming, and so we've got all of these working together. So what we need to do as the church is understand, okay, what is the new generation doing and how do we reach that? But how then do we also continue to do things that are going to reach the people that are in the other generations that are also making up the culture and the context where we live? This is further complicated with the troves of immigration that are happening, coming from countries at all kinds of different places in that journey. And so they may be thinking postmodern, they may be post-postmodern, they may be still thinking in a modern way, they may be extremely traditional, thinking much more like the baby boomers would have thought, years and years ago. And the church would have been quite comfortable with that, or with their parents thinking. And that's because they're coming from cultures all over the world, and they're coming together, and we need to be thinking, how do we do this? So two approaches that I'd encourage. First off is missional engagement. This is how the church is missional, okay? Individual people behaving missionally at work and with their neighbors and in the community. And so that missional engagement is very, very simply people being engaged with their neighbors. So I went a while ago to one of our churches that would be, I would say, on the larger spectrum within our fellowship of churches, church that was basically full on Sunday. Basically that Sunday morning that I was there, if 10 more people came, 5 would have had to stand at the back. That's how full it was. That church, when I met with the eldership and the leaders afterwards and really dug down with them, they had one person come to faith in Christ the year before, and it was an accident. they weren't reaching out. This person came against every possible thing that you would think. You know, that it was hilarious. You drive up to the place, and the sign was so bad that you thought the building must be closed. The paint was all coming off. You could hardly read it, and the building was quite a ways down, so you really didn't think there was anything even there. And this woman came searching to find God, and she went anyway to see. And nobody had connected with her. Nobody even tried to welcome her, and she just came anyway. So God was driving in this woman. God did it. So they didn't get the credit. So that's why I say it was an accident. Where was I going with that? Anyway, the reality was that for those people, when I met with them and I talked with them about some simple things, like, you know, in the summertime when the weather's nice and you're going to be outside having a barbecue, wouldn't it be nice if you went next door and invited your neighbors over just for a barbecue to get to know them? Just a very, you don't, there's no agenda other than, you know what, we've been living next door to each other, or you guys just moved in, love to get to know you. That's the first step in developing a relationship that the gospel can get into. That's being life on mission, right? And I talked about a few different examples like that, and after a while I got this weird look from the people, and finally somebody put their hand up and got the nerve to talk to me. And they said, "What you're talking about terrifies us." That's a quote. That's exactly what they said. And I was a little bit baffled because I was like, this is so simple, so easy. And yet we have to understand our own cultures and context and figure out, okay, there are things that we have in our own lives that we have built up that we are actually going to have to overcome if we're going to be on mission. It's just the reality. Or we are saying that it is okay for our neighbors and their loved ones and the others around them to go to hell. And we really don't care enough to walk across the street or next door to do something about it, right? And so with that kind of a reality, it's an important thing. So missional, living in a missional way as a missionary, this is the first shift in the thinking that has to happen. So when you go to work, thinking about, okay, what is my role there? Before I came into ministry, I was a... an automotive technician. I worked at a Ford dealership as a mechanic, and I really felt God had me in this place on purpose, and that I had a responsibility. And so I would pray every day, God, give me a chance, an opportunity to share with somebody. And I got so that I was really, really nervous about praying because he gave me opportunities every time. And it was like, oh man. Sometimes it was like really hard and I didn't know what to say and all that. But you know what? That's exactly who we need to be and what we need to be trying to do. It can scare us half to death, but that's okay. We may not have answers, and that's all right. What we do have is the story that God worked in our own lives. of hope and restoration that's already happened in us. So at work and with our neighbors, one of my things that I have done on a personal level with this, and there's all kinds of different things you could do, but I, a number of years ago, started really feeling convicted about my own neighborhood, and I travel so much, I'm not home, and thinking, you know, there's a lot of, it's easy to make excuses, you know, I'm not really around and all of that, but I knew I wasn't good enough. So I was really feeling convicted about that, and so the Lord just gave something to me, an idea, and it was just go outside. And so whenever I would see my neighbors, and I still do this, if I see my neighbors outside, I decided to go out the front. I'm going to go outside. And I'll say hi, or I'll take out the garbage when they're doing it, or I'll go out and wash the car, and I get to talk with them. And that has led to dozens of conversations where people start to share with me the pain and the mess in their lives. Like, you would not believe the stories that they started to tell me. And I haven't got time to dig into them too deep here, but they're amazing stories about the personal things in their life that I didn't think I even knew them well enough for them to open up about those things, but they did. And it was really, really pretty cool. But that was my decision. And it also led to me actually leading my one neighbor to Christ. And he's now with the Lord. Yeah, he had cancer. And I led him to Christ on the sidewalk out in front of our house. It was minus 20. And he went out to take his garbage out. And he was really frail at this point. And so I went out. And I had to run out because I thought he was going to fall because he was walking like this, trying to carry his stuff. And I thought, oh, I better get out there. So I ran out, slippers and a shirt and pants and no hat. It's minus 20, and I am follically challenged. It was bitter, bitter cold. The guy wanted to talk on the sidewalk. All I wanted to do was help him with his recycle bin. And he wanted to know about Christ. And, you know, I knew it because he led with something that was incredible. After talking with him all that time, you know what he said to me? I nearly met my maker this week. And I'm like, okay, now, Lord, that's a gift. Because all I had to say was, Keith, would you know him if you met him? And I had the opportunity right there to lead him to Jesus. And now he's with him, and it's beautiful. But what for me wouldn't have happened, did, because God burdened my heart and made me feel incredibly guilty because I had not been making any effort with my neighbors at all. And the sad part is sometimes we get this mixed up and think that the church is about just this. And we're on a mission. And we need to remember that we are on a mission. This is important, but we are each on a mission. And the church is to be really a visionary experience where we are dreaming what it ought to be. And it should be forward thinking and ever expanding. And yet often that's not the case. So we need to be thinking that way. Churches corporately need to behave missionally. And this will change things. This helps change the thinking of people. When the church as a body is able to say, you know, the pastor gets up and says, you know, there's this area of the neighborhood where we know they're really suffering. Is there something we can do? Maybe we can get we're going to have a meeting after church where we're going to sit down and talk about what we can do to make a difference in that neighborhood. That's missional thinking of the church. And the more you do that, the more it changes the DNA in your people. And they get engaged and they start to share Christ with people and your church grows. But it's missional thinking. And that comes from the leadership. And so as leaders, no matter what ministry area you're in, those things are important things. Keeping your fingers on the pulse of the community, knowing when there's hurt and when there's pain and when people are suffering and being able to engage and step into that is critically, critically important. So that's another way that these things can happen. As we begin looking at community awareness, and this is the second aspect of this. So the church and the people need to both live missionally, and it's not enough for the church leadership to do it and everybody just does it together. As individuals, we need to be living that out too. And that's missional engagement. The second piece is what I call community awareness. I grew up in a family where small business was a way of life. That's my family were kind of entrepreneurs at the just at the basis level. That's who we were. It was never a question of whether you could get a job or had a job. It's just you would create one. You would do something. And I remember being 14 and thinking I needed some money. And so I just had to think about what I went to talk to my dad about a job. He's like, well, what are you going to do? And so he said, well, there's some wood over there. And I got this board and I made a sign. I painted it all white and put a sign on it, small engine repairs, because I knew how to fix my motorcycle. And so I could fix small engines. So I made this sign, small engine repairs. People started bringing me their lawnmowers and snowmobiles and snowblowers, and we started to fix them. And I was 14. That kind of mindset was what I grew up with. But one of the things that I learned being in a family where small business was our way, from my dad, who used to, he'd send me around. We grew up in Brantford, and so he would send me to the newspaper with text that he'd written out for an ad and whatever else he wanted to put in. This was back in the day, right? When the newspaper actually existed. And he would say, I want these ads put in. And he'd said, I can't expect people to buy our stuff or to get our services if they don't know we're here. And so I would travel around and go to these places and put these ads in and do that kind of stuff. And the same thing is true in the church. And here's a kind of a mind-blowing reality. You may be in a big building right on a visible corner in your community, and there are people who live and work and breathe within sight of your building that don't know your building is there. I know that to be true. You know how I know? I often get asked to go and help our existing churches with, they're being on mission or doing different things. One of the things that I like to do is I go to the places in the community around. And so one time I was going to one of our churches. It was a larger church, and I won't tell you which one to guard the guilty. But anyway, I went to this church, and before I went, I went about an hour early, and I walked around to businesses that were within visible sight of this building, because it was on a main thoroughfare in one of our cities. And I talked to the people who worked there, because I thought, what better people? I don't know if somebody in the store that's just a customer lives in the area, but I know these people. They've got to live close if they're working in this community. And I couldn't find anybody who knew where the church was or had ever heard the name of it before. Okay, and this is a large church, so more than 400 people, okay? And they were having trouble with outreach, obviously. That's why they were asking me to come in. And so when I met with them, the board immediately dismissed it and said, oh, well, they must have been just immigrants that are all new, because everybody would know. And I said, actually, no. I specifically went to people that I thought these people must know. People who looked like they'd grown up in the area that were the same ethnic makeup as that church. They didn't have a clue. And so all the excuses and all the stuff, the reality is that we need to figure out how to get the word out. So as church planters, one of the things that I encourage our guys to do is to study their community. You become the expert on your community. You know everything about your community. You know more about the community than the people who work and live and have grown up in the community. That's what you need to do. So you go to every business, you go to everything. Whenever you see a plaque on the wall, you ask about it. What does that mean? Why is that there? Who is that person? Why is this? Why did they do that? When did they do that? You ask the questions. You understand the community, because when you understand the pathos of the community, you know what buttons to push. So there's some very, very important pieces that come out in all of that when you begin to understand your community and the things that you can reach. The other thing is to understand what communication tools get beyond the front door of these people in your community.
So it used to be that people used, you know, you got that flyers all the time. Remember, you used to get those big stacks of flyers every week in your door, and people would go through them and decide where they were going to buy whatever. We don't get that anymore. We do sometimes, but not usually. They go straight in the recycle bin. But it's not the same as it used to be. They were great tools. Tools have changed. People are on social media all the time. Now the first place that people look for anything is they get out their phone and they Google it, and they're looking, you know, what do I want here? So we need to figure out ways to engage them there. We need to figure out ways to engage them in every area of their communication. If it's true, and this is what the advertising experts are telling us, that the average person in a Canadian city sees over 3,000 advertisements every day, that your brain blocks about 2,975 of them out, and of the final 25, you can't actually recall more than two of them. If that's true, we've got a challenge on our hands. Okay, and it's a big one. The challenge is, how do we create relationships with these people in a way that we will be remembered and that they will then engage in that instead of merely blending in to the mix and being part of the din in the background, right? And so that's an important factor. One of the things that we have learned in all of the research and study on getting the word out is that people don't usually engage with something until they've heard it at least seven times. And so for you to, I've had so many people tell me that they spent an enormous amount of money on an advertising campaign and it all went out at the same time once. And they're like so excited. Oh, we blanketed 10,000 homes. And they did it once. They used one medium and they did it once. And my response to that, and I don't usually say it because I don't want to burst their bubble, is that they should have saved their money because we need to be strategic in it. So here's what I encourage our church planters to do. Develop a strategy that explores all of the mediums that are available. So if you're going through and you look at the list that I put in your notes there, you've got word of mouth, you've got posters, flyers, mailers, TV, radio, billboards, bus stops, social media, all of the different mediums in social media, all of those things. So you're covering the whole spectrum. So you develop a strategy that encompasses those things. You figure out a plan for implementing that in such a way that you can ensure that people will be engaged at least seven times, and you have a drastically different response. It's drastic. So I taught this to our church planters just a little while ago, and one of them had been struggling along, and he came to me a month later, and he's like, I went home the day that you taught that, and I just decided I'm putting this into practice right away. And he said, there are new families in my church this week. Three of them. Three new families, not just one, like, people. But he said, direct result of implementing this stuff. He's so excited. He says, I'm developing a whole plan, and we're going to budget for it next year, and we're going to... He's all excited about how they're going to implement. See, what it does is we're not trying to promote the whole idea of just come and see. Because we understand that the church is not just about in here and, oh, you come and you find Jesus in here and that's all it is. It's a balance, right? We're trying to figure out how people get out there and engage people, and we communicate with people, and we also bring them together in community, and we do all of these things at once. And it's, we don't polarize it and say, well, this is bad and this is good. Or this is kind of bad, but this is mediocre, and this is best. We have an understanding that there are different approaches appropriate for different segments of the culture, and we have to make sure that we have prepared the entire culture community that we're trying to reach so that we can have the best opportunity for success in this. And so this is the challenge that we're faced with in it all. So my challenge now, It's interesting. When we planted, Tammy and I planted a church, this is a number of years ago, because I've been doing this now. This is my 11th conference as the church planting director. It's crazy. I can't believe it. So, but when we planted before that, we developed a strategy that said, okay, if it's true that it takes at least 7 hits for people to engage, we want to make sure that we get into their home at least 7 times. And that we also, by doing that, provide the best footing for our people who are missionally engaged in their neighborhoods to help people and to prepare things for them. So the more people are exposed to our, for lack of a better term, advertising, it's not what it's don't take that wrongly. I'm just trying to find a word. The more we get our exposure out there, the easier it is for you. When you go to talk to your neighbor, they go, oh, I heard about that. Yeah, I saw that. It eases the pressure, and it gives them a different thing. As you sponsor events and you go and help in the community and you help the Nova Vita, or you help whatever that particular thing is that you are helping with, and you're doing it in the name of the church, all of a sudden people are, oh, hey, there's that church helped with that, or that church made a difference. And those people are different than some of those other churches, because they're, and that name all of a sudden begins to have an effect. So we developed a strategy where we got into the homes. We targeted an area where there was 10,000 homes, and we thought, okay, we're going to try and get into these homes over the next 7 weeks. Once a week, we're going to get into their homes. And so we did. We found several TV spots that we could get into free, community advertising, things like that. We got in free, so we used the TV, we used radio, we used posters and mailers and door-to-door banners, or flyers, and coffee shops and grocery stores and variety stores, and everywhere that we could possibly think of, we had our presence. And the campaign just went all over the whole thing. So we went from a core team of 35 people to 126 in 2 weeks, because the people had this engagement, and they had this opportunity, and it was crazy. So there was this opportunity that came. So what I did over the years was say, okay, well, if we're going to do a campaign and we find out that it takes this larger amount to do it, how can we decrease that? How far can we go back and still have effectiveness? And so the next campaign we did, I did 6 times. The next time I did 5, and then I tried 4, and the effectiveness decreased each time, just a little bit more, until I hit 4. It went down quite a bit. I tried it at 3. And I might as well not have done anything. It was 0 results. When I went back to 4, I got some results. But 5 or 6 was way better. So we always, we just planned. We budgeted for these plans. And we had a strategy of how to get into those contexts on an ongoing basis. And so we used word of mouth. We used posters. We used flyers. We used mailers. There are places in some of your communities where it's perfectly legal for you to use telephone poles, and you can put stuff up on them for free, and people do it all the time. Use it. Why not? People stop their car, they look over their shoulder, and there it is. It happens all the time. And so why wouldn't you use that? You know, the people are using it for the band that's playing down the street. Why wouldn't you? You should. And so there's opportunities for that. I'm not a big fan of mailers, but you know, they're a possibility. They're usually, the reason why I don't like them is Canada Post is just crippled us on it because of the union and the way that they've structured things. If you're doing a mailer, bulk mail, they have the opportunity, the union has worked this into the contract for the delivery people, they have the opportunity to refuse to deliver it 3 times before they actually have to deliver it. So if you need it out on Tuesday, which, by the way, is the best day of the week to get any kind of information into somebody's hand. Just number one, scientifically proven, okay? Just saying. So Tuesdays. But if you want to get it in on Tuesday, chances are it's not going to go out until Friday. And if anything else happens, it might not get there at all until Monday or Tuesday of the next week. And so this is just a reality that does happen. I actually paid Canada Post thousands of dollars one time, and half of my delivery didn't get delivered till the critical time was already passed. So I don't use them too much unless it's way in advance and it's kind of like there's not date sensitive. If it's date sensitive, don't do it. There are other ways to do that. So that's why I'm not real big on mailers. There are other ways to do it. So use the TV, use the radio, use billboards, bus stops, TV theaters. Like the big billboards, they actually work. There's a reason why they're all over the place. people look at them. You read them. You see them all the time. And so why not? Why don't we use them? They're actually not that expensive when you consider what you get out of them. So they're actually pretty good. So movie theaters, there are opportunities in local movie theaters where you can actually do advertising before movies and that kind of thing. That is not an impossible thing. Get a very creative and quality slide up there on the screen. It's not impossible. And then social media stuff. So you know that if you're expecting somebody to engage with you as a church, that they are going to go to your website and they're going to look for a Facebook account, they're going to look. It's just the reality of it. So if you don't have those as a minimum and they're good, don't expect people to come as a result of it. You need to do that. You need to have it. I would suggest that you have as many of them as possible and that you link them together. So there are tools that are social media tools like Hootsuite, Buffer, and FriendsAdMe. These are tools that actually link together your social media sites. So you can have, you know, Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram and these other ones, and you post it once using Hootsuite, and it goes to all of them. And so you get the same thing in all the different mediums. So, you know, for those of us who, how many of you use Facebook? Okay. That's great, but if you are under 30, most of you don't use Facebook. Okay, so this is just the reality. The millennials aren't using it. They just don't anymore. So we need to make sure that we're using other mediums, we're using different things, we're engaging. Okay, and so always exploring, always looking, asking the kids, what are you using? Because, I mean, even to tell you right now, this is what you use, this is what you, it's changing all the time. And so we need to be talking and asking and engaging. One of the things that you can do also in some of these things is, and this is not that expensive, and our church plants have shown it to be highly effective, is to buy advertising time on Facebook. You know, you can do that. You can buy advertising time. You can target an audience. You can target things that they like and things that are common denominators. You can areas, age groupings, genders. There's a whole spectrum of those today. Anyway, we won't go there. You can focus your promotional things to the particular people that you want to engage. So that kind of stuff is something that we need to be thinking about. And the problem is that ministry's busy. If you're in a leadership role in the church, it can get sometimes just overwhelming. You have to prepare the messages, but then, you know, you got the phone calls of the people who are broken and hurting, and you're pulled all over the place in things and feeling overwhelmed already. And then it's like, well, how do I do this? How do I have, you know, an outreach strategy that encompasses all these things if I have to do it? And the reality is, you don't have to do it. Somebody has to do it. And so what I want to encourage you to do is one of the things that I did. And I try to put together a team of people who liked that kind of stuff. And commission them to do it. Commission them. Because as a leader, you are going to be the bottleneck for the growth of your ministry if you don't commission other leaders. You need to be commissioning other leaders. So equip them and commission them. There should always be somebody who is the champion of your outreach thinking. And it probably shouldn't be you. It probably shouldn't be. But that person needs to own it and fully engage it and keep you on board with it. And then you need to celebrate it like crazy. And it will move. These are the things that will help you to get past that. Now, some considerations that come into this. When you're looking at the calendar, I think it's strategic to look at key dates in the calendar and understand also that as we look at those holidays, and they're in your notes, that there is a mindset going on in the community. You just think about your own energy levels and how that functions as a church. In the fall, it's going up and everything's going up. And actually, the amount of work that you have to put into ministry is pretty light because it's taken on a life of its own and it's just growing. Right up until Christmas, it's thriving. And you, as much as it's busy, you don't have to put in a whole lot of effort to keep that thing rising and really doing its thing until after Christmas. And the thing does a nosedive. And everybody's depressed and it was snowing outside and they're cold and they're like, you figure like half the church wants to commit suicide because it's just depressed. And you're down here and you're figuring like, as a pastor, your energy level has to go like this while theirs is going like that because you're pouring in a ton of effort just to keep them level. And this is what happens. But then as the weather starts to get nicer, it starts to rise and you get weather like we had yesterday and people are feeling pretty good. Because in Cambridge, it was 20 degrees yesterday. It was beautiful. And so people are starting to feel more excited and encouraged and we're coming towards Easter again and it becomes less pressure that you have to put in. Take into consideration that natural flow because it happens the same way every year and we need to understand it. And if we respond to that so that in the times when people are struggling, we are offering a place of hope. And when the times when people are excited, we're taking it a little bit easier and offering them a place to celebrate. We understand the ebb and flow of our lives and our communities. That ebb and flow changes on community too. So if you're in cottage country, it's a different thing. Because the summertime here in Cambridge, it's like ghost town. You could bowl, down here on a Sunday, because people just, they're gone to cottage country. And the churches in cottage country that are 80 people like last week in the summertime, they're 250 and they're just like going like crazy. And that's what happens because they all left here. And so we've got this dynamic going on. We need to be the experts in our community of the culture and the context that's going on. You need to plan ahead and budget for this stuff. It's an outreach budget. I feel like it's an absolute necessity. I can't give you a number on it because you have to evaluate what tools are available for you in your community and in your context. But take it seriously and budget enough. My encouragement to our church planters is to have at least a minimum of four major communication blitzes into the community on top of the regular branding communication that happens. And so there, if you're going to do an effort, it's going to get the word out in that way, that you're doing it at least four times a year. So leading up into the fall, leading up into Christmas, leading up into Easter, leading up into the springtime, spring and summer break, and you've got these things going on. And the thing is, you will continue, you'll do a little rise, and then you'll do another little rise, and then you'll do another little rise in communication and connection with your community. But it's important for you to have the finger on the pulse and understand where those best times are because they're different based on where you live. And I can't give it to you absolute from here. It's your job. So do I have questions? Any questions, guys, on stuff? I know there's a lot of different places that this could go. So he's asking about the language that we use in on Sunday morning when unbelievers are present. If I would use language that communicates the truth, but maybe doesn't use the theological terms that maybe are misunderstood or not understood at all. Okay, or at least define some. My practice has always been to communicate profound truth with the simplest language possible, still explaining the theological terms. I'm not afraid of using those, but my practice has always been, I want people to know Jesus. I don't want them to necessarily know how much I know. and that's an important thing for me. So that's how I did it. That would be how most of our church planters would function as well, and in that evangelistic way as well. Other questions? That's a good question. He's asking about, you know, helpful ways to get the church family on board with that kind of idea. I think communication is critical in any ministry, and I think people will understand that some kind of communication is important. But the challenge is educating them on these tools. And sometimes it's just a matter of actually having, you know, in a church family context, having the conversation and saying, guys, it's changed around here. And talk to them about the things that they use and the things that they see. And, you know, our neighbors would know about us if we did this. Maybe we should do that. How much is it going to cost? Well, it's going to cost us $200 to do that. What do you think? People might think, okay, well, that's having open conversations in a non-threatening way is a helpful thing. And just understanding that whenever we come with a new idea, we've had a long time to process it. And it can be brand new, and it can feel like people are opposed to us when all they need to do is understand it. So don't feel threatened by that, but walk the road with them. So that's how I would approach that kind of thing. My challenge to you is, as you go from this workshop, is to take out a calendar and mark out the key dates in your plan, in your community. I'd start, because every one of our communities, you know, the fall kickoff kind of thing is important. That's broad across Ontario and Quebec. Christmas is a key thing. So those two are key. Easter is key. Even like in those three are very important dates that are just there. And our culture gives us the opportunity to use them because, I mean, the culture celebrates Christmas. The culture celebrates Easter. And as mixed up and messed up as the world is in all of that, it gives us an opportunity. And so make sure you use those. And then look at the others as they pertain to your particular community. And then from there, really wrestle through what is it that is going to reach your neighbors. What are they using? Are they, you know, if they're you have more millennials, you're probably going to want to lean heavy on Instagram rather than Facebook. But you probably need to have both anyway. So make sure you have those. If you are wrestling with that and thinking, yeah, I don't even know how to post on my own Facebook, let alone do something, that's okay. But there are people in your congregation who totally get that, and they are so engaged with that, that they got a problem. and take advantage of it. They know how to use it. Use it for good. Right? Use it for good. And so figure out a way, to do that. Just a word of caution. If you're going to set up a social media account for the church, don't have someone in your church set it up as a part of their account, because if they get ticked off or their job takes them away, guess what happens to your account? It's gone. So it's better to set it up on a church account that's connected to the church, that kind of thing. So make sure you do that. You can give them administrative rights, so they go in and they can do all the stuff. But then you have the authority to go in and change that when the time comes. Just a caution in that, because I've seen that happen. There's a bunch. If you go through our church websites, all of our churches, there's a whole bunch of them that have defunct websites and names and things that somebody in the church set up for them and then left mad, or you know, something else happened, and now there's these websites out there that are not being used or being used poorly. Couple of notes on websites. It's almost counterproductive. Well, actually, it is counterproductive to have a website and have it out of date. If you've got stuff on there from last summer still, oh man, don't do that. I went to one of our churches just recently that still had Christmas stuff on their big sign out in front of their church. I'm like, oh man, guys, it takes 15 minutes to go out there and change that. Don't do that. The people look at it, and that quickly they make a judgment. These people are irrelevant. They still think it's Christmas. You know, it's March, it's April. No, wait a minute, it's almost May. You know, like, and it's still out there. And that's what happens. And so don't do that. Community forms an opinion of us and in our context very, very quickly and very easily. Do your best to present yourself best in the community. This is the first thing that they see. They don't know who you are. And when they see your advertising, when they see the sign you put outside, if you say something obscure, that, you know, if you really step back and read that and think about it, and you think, well, if I was not a believer at all, if I had no Christian context at all, would I understand that sign? If you ask that question and the answer is, yeah, probably not, then don't put it up. There have been the most bizarre signs that I've seen at some of our churches. I saw one, and it had this bizarre statement on it that I can't even remember. It was so weird. But it was like short forms and things all stated that I'm looking at it and thinking, okay, they're advertising a special night with some guy with a Jewish name about a ministry that has a name that's a Hebrew name that they've translated into English. And it's like they had the guy's name and they had this name of the ministry on the next line and they had, you know, be there Wednesday. And it was like, whoa, that it was just like the most bizarre thing. It was almost like it was some foreign code thing that you had to figure out what it was. Who's that going to reach? And why would you actually put that on a sign out front? Think carefully about what you put out there. And you're actually better to have a blank sign than a sign that has really bad information on it. And I know that's harsh, but it's true. So if you can't think of something really great to say, you know, put something just as generic as you can. God loves you and he cares about you. Something simple, you know, just if you can't think of anything great, put something simple. If you've got a sign, don't try and be cute or cool or something if you can't figure it out, because people will not get it. Be very careful, okay?